College football is finally here. I am so pumped to take my daughters to their first big time game. We're going to the Penn State game on Saturday. That will be awesome. Get a chance to watch Michigan, Florida, Florida State, Alabama, and get a chance to play some wagers on those if you're inclined. BetDSI has been in business for over 20 years. This is not some fly-by-night operation. A-plus rated on sportsbook review sites. Use your sports knowledge to make some extra cash. They got odds on pretty much everything. Sports, politics. Look, if you want to place a bet on something, pretty much BetDSI has it. Here's the key, though, for you guys that want to start to bet these college football games this weekend. Use promo code COLLEGE25 and get a $25 free wager just for registering. If you decide to deposit, you will get a 200% bonus match on your money. Think about that real quick. You get a free $25 wager. COLLEGE25 at BetDSI.com and a 200% extra bonus when you deposit. That's COLLEGE25 to get your free wager and start winning today.
Pour yourself a cold one.
They strike them, huh?
And listen to Russ Tucker and Philadelphia Eagles film junkie Fran Duffy break down the top college prospects on another tasty edition of The College Draft.
Yeah, it is Daddy Soda time here on The College Draft, and it is our final, absolute final conference preview, and also our week one preview, where there's actually a few good games, one in particular that we need to talk about. Florida State, Alabama, you might have heard of him. He's the star. If you listen to this podcast, you have heard of him. Fran Duffy from the Philadelphia Eagles. Highly encourage you to check him out on Twitter, at FDuffy3. Hopefully a lot of you are already checking me out on social media. At Ross Tucker NFL. On both Twitter and Instagram and Facebook.com/RossTuckerNFL. This is our last conference preview, and we're going to dive into the biggest game, at least, of the weekend. You can always check out all of the podcasts that we provide for you, fantasy, gambling, Ross Tucker Football Podcast, over at RossTucker.com or wherever podcasts are found. And if you want to extend the conversation with Fran or with me or with the listeners, make sure you sign up and check out tuckheads.com. Fran, it's a big one. It's the Pac-12. They are loaded with quarterbacks. I'm not even going to waste time. I'm not going to say, how are you doing? I know you're doing great. It's football season. I know you. You're doing great. Let's get into the Daddy Soda time.
Daddy Sodas.
All right, Pac-12 quarterbacks. We talked about it last week. Kind of amazing, Fran. Sam Darnold, Josh Rosen, Luke Falk are the three guys that their names are up there. And then you got Jake Browning, by the way, who was first team all Pac-12 last year. No big deal. But out of the three bigger names, especially Darnold, Rosen, which one do you like the most?
Well, Ross, I certainly like Darnold the most. And right now, he would be my favorite quarterback overall in this class. And yeah, it's a limited sample size from what we saw a year ago, his redshirt freshman year. But you're talking about a kid who's 6'4", 225, a lot of pro-style passing concepts in that offense. So a lot of things that you see from him on tape are translatable to the next level schematically. But then also, you see the traits. You know, you see the ability to work in a muddy pocket. You see the accuracy both from the pocket and on the run. You see the kid throw with really natural anticipation, especially for a young quarterback. That's really impressive at the college level. The ball is consistently coming out, not just on time, but often early, hitting the receiver just as he gets out of his break. You really like to see that from Sam Darnold because he doesn't have an elite arm. He doesn't have, and everyone talks about the mechanics with him and the slow release. To me, that's not as big of a deal because, A, I think that the arm action, I think, is pretty quick. And then, B, with his anticipation, he steals some of those milliseconds back because of how quickly he's able to process and see things developing in front of him. So I look at Sam Darnold. I see a guy who could be the total package. I'd like to see him cut out some of the forced throws we saw a year ago early on. And then if he could just overall just gain more experience, get a little bit better all across the board. I mean, this kid has the ability to be very, very good. So I'm really excited about Sam Darnold. But on the same token, like you mentioned, there's a couple other guys that are, you know, easily easy to get excited about. You know, Josh Rosen, to me, has all the tools to be a top-flight NFL quarterback. He's 6'4", a little bit light at 210 pounds. The thing you worry about Josh Rosen, there's all the rumors and reports about what he's like off the field, so that'll play itself out. But then more importantly, the shoulder injury, it's something that's plagued him throughout his career, and he had surgery, ended his season last year prematurely. He did come back in time for spring ball this past offseason and was able to practice all the way up through the end of the offseason, so that's a good sign for him moving forward. But we'll just see how that impacts his game. I think that overall, you look at Josh Rosen, you see a guy who's really clean mechanically in the pocket. He's very accurate. He's got the ability to move in a pocket with his eyes downfield and operate with bodies around him. What I really like to see, you want to see the you just get them a little bit bigger, and then you want to see those off the field questions, whether it's the injuries or character, kind of work itself out. So physically, I think Rosen's got everything you want to be a big time NFL quarterback. I love the way he processes information and gets through his reads. I'm a big fan of Josh Rosen on the field. And then you get to Luke Falk, who doesn't come from the same kind of offensive system. You know, he's 6'4", 216 pounds. But what's interesting about Luke Falk is Mike Leach has gone on the record a number of times, the head coach of Washington State, saying that he's given more responsibility to Falk than really any other quarterback he's worked with in terms of his pre-snap responsibilities and being able to change plays at the line of scrimmage because of how much of a football nut he is. He's got the ability to change into the run game. One of their offensive linemen at Washington State credits the entire run game to Luke Falk, which I think is a really interesting situation there for a guy that's the quarterback. And in that system, we know that those guys put up huge numbers. But I like the responsibility that Luke Falk is given. He is an accurate kid. He throws with anticipation. I think he's a good touch thrower. He's not a power thrower. He's not a drive thrower. But overall, I think Falk has a lot to offer. I'm just not sure that he's going to be a starting quarterback at the next level, but I really like his chances to stick in the league for a long time. He's a really fun player to root for, has been extremely productive, a former walk-on that's really kind of worked himself into the player he is today.
Any thoughts on Browning from Washington?
Obviously extremely productive, and I haven't done a full study on him yet, but having watched John Ross last year and then Dante Pettis, who we're going to talk about coming up in a bit, you could see that Browning is not a power thrower, and you can see that there are still some things there mechanically you'd like to work through, but that's just watching from afar. I do want to dig a little bit deeper onto him.
Running backs in the Pac-12 include the two kids from Arizona State, Kalen Ballage and DeMario Richard, Ronald Jones from USC. There's a couple guys at Washington, and Royce Freeman. Gosh, it kind of feels like he's been in Oregon forever.
Yeah, it does seem that way. But when you look at Arizona State, I mean, Kalen Ballage, to me, Ross, is really, really intriguing because he's 6'3", 220, so he's got rare size for the position, but he's explosive in a straight line. He can catch the ball out of the backfield and be a threat out in the open field. He's really strong. He runs with some natural power, who shows really good contact balance. And like I said, that versatility to be such an impact player in the passing game. He's coming along as a pass protector. He's not where he needs to be yet, but I think overall, when you watch him, you see the physical traits. I think he's a little indecisive at times as a runner, and that's one of the things that scares me a little bit. But those are some of the same concerns I had about David Johnson coming out of Northern Iowa, a guy that I think physically is very similar to Kalen Ballage, you know, in terms of the physical dimensions and what those reported test scores look like for Kalen Ballage, I think are very intriguing as well. It wouldn't surprise me at all if Ballage gets a lot of comparisons to a guy who's, you know, in the same state right now in David Johnson. Ballage is really, really intriguing, and I'm excited to see him potentially take on a bigger workload moving forward. Was not a full-time starter for them last year because they've got another guy in DeMario Richard who also gets a lot of carries. And Richard is a change of pace guy. He's a senior, 5'10", 210 pounds. To me, he's like the anti-Kalen Ballage. You know, to me, he's got pretty good vision for a college running back. He's got the ability to make people miss. There's not a lot that's special in his game in terms of his lateral agility and his burst in a straight line. He's not a powerful guy, but I think he's just a savvy, instinctive runner, a guy that can come into the league on the back end of a roster and be a change of pace option. So two NFL-worthy backs there on that Sun Devils roster. And then University of Washington. They've got two backs as well. Miles Gaskin has gotten a lot of the pub, and he's a little bit undersized, 5'9", 191. So you worry about his ability to hold up at the next level. But I think he's got plus vision. He's got the ability to get skinny in a hole and pick his way through the protection. But then also, he's got really good lateral agility. I think he's a really smooth runner. So athletically, there's a lot to like there. I just worry about his straight line burst. I don't think that he's as explosive as you need to be for a back that small. He's not especially dynamic in that way. And he also just goes down on first contact way too often. I worry about Miles Gaskin's ability to be able to make that first defender miss at the next level. But they've got a guy, Ross, in LaVon Coleman, who is Miles Gaskin's backup. He's 5'11", 235, big kid, really explosive. Like, really, it's really surprising to see how much ground he can pick up in chunks of yardage. He set the record for Washington last year with 7.5 yards a carry. He was their special teams MVP last year. And that physicality that he plays with on special teams carries over and onto the offensive side of the football. He's a great blocker. He's a physical runner. He's really tough. Again, you like the vision there. He's not the most laterally explosive guy in terms of his quickness and lateral agility and ability to jump cut, not like Gaskin, but straight line moving forward. He kind of reminds me a little bit of Carlos Williams coming out of Florida State a few years back. I think Coleman is a guy that has the ability to stick in the NFL, maybe not as a starter, but as a nice number two back because of his ability to play special teams. He's a good third down player. Coleman really, really intrigues me. And then Ronald Jones, you mentioned, from USC. He kind of took over for Justin Davis last year when he stepped out with an injury, and Jones flashes a freshman as well. This is his first year being draft eligible, 6 foot, 200 pounds. So he's got some size to him, but he's explosive, man. He's got the ability to take any play the distance and get to the end zone. He's a high school track star. I like his speed in the open field, but he also shows really good contact balance, the ability to run through that first tackle attempt. I'd like to see him be a little bit more decisive as a runner. I think that he's got a little bit in terms of, he's got to be in a very specific scheme, I think, moving forward until I see a little bit more from him, and he needs to get better in pass protection. But Ronald Jones is really exciting. There's the two guys out in Oregon. One is Royce Freeman from the Ducks. I'm not a big Royce Freeman guy. I think that overall, when you watch him, you see a guy that's got some athletic limitations. He's obviously been very productive. He's 5'11", 230 pounds, got the strength you want. He takes care of the football. He rarely puts it on the ground. But I think he's a little bit indecisive as well. When you look at some of these other backs we've talked about, there are some yards I think he left on the field, and he's got to get better in pass protection. His former teammate, Thomas Tyner, who I really liked when he was at Oregon a few years ago, he retired briefly because of injury. He ended up going and working as like a lumber broker in somewhere in Oregon. And he decided, you know what, I want to go back and fill out the rest of my eligibility. Goes to Oregon State. Now it looks like he's going to be the guy there for the Beavers this year. 5'11", 232, really competitive runner. I thought he reminded me some of Ryan Matthews when I first watched him very early in his career back in 2014 at Oregon. And I'm excited to see what Tyner looks like coming off a year and a half without football. Tyner's an interesting guy, competitive runner. I like his balance. So there's 4, 5, 6 running backs that I'm excited about out in the West Coast.
Love it. What about wide receivers, tight ends? There's usually a lot of them out in the Pac-12. It doesn't seem like there's as many this year.
Yeah, there's not as many. A lot of people are excited about Deontay Burnett from USC. He had a big game in the bowl game against Penn State. There's Tyrell Johnson from Arizona. But the guy that really excites me at wide receiver is Dante Pettis. And I didn't watch him, actually, Ross, until this past week. He's listed 6'1", 175. He doesn't come off to me as a super explosive kid watching him on tape. And I think he's got some savvy to him as a route runner. He does a great job at getting in the blind spot of defensive backs and then breaking off at the top of his stem to create separation. I think he's a really savvy route runner. But most importantly, this kid catches everything. Nothing hit. If it's like somewhat within his grasp, defender around him or not, this kid is going to bring it in. And I had him for one drop of a catchable throw all season long. That's like unheard of. I'm not saying like an uncontested catch. I mean defenders over his body, having to pirouette in the air, having to reel it in with one hand, making catches along the sideline. This kid reels in everything. So Dante Pettis, to me, I'm not sure if he's quite explosive enough or athletic enough to maybe be an outstanding outside receiver, but I think he's got the ability to be a really good slot guy. I'm excited about Dante Pettis. He's been one of my favorite receivers that I've watched across the country so far. And then at tight end, the one kid that really intrigues me before we move on is Dalton Schultz from Stanford. You know, he's 6'6", 233 pounds. He first stood out to me 2 years ago as a true freshman when I was studying Austin Hooper. You know, I'm watching Dalton Schultz, and he got some starts over Hooper that year. He really stood out to me because of his movement, surprising route runner for such a young player. He was just a freshman at the time. The more I watched Hooper, the more Dalton Schultz stood out to me. So I'm excited to get more of a look at him as well.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I mean, if you start at tight end for Stanford, you're pretty much a pro. It's just the tight end lineage that they've got going there is crazy. Any other – Tyrell Johnson from Arizona is a name to know. Along the offensive line, we actually got an email, Fran. Somebody emailed us over at rostucker.com and said, Ross, you got to check out Trey Adams from Washington. He's now up to 6'8", 328. He was first-team All-Pac-12 as a true sophomore. He's the best lineman we've had here in a long time. I did not get a chance to check him out yet, but obviously, you know, the folks up in Washington, some of our listeners are fired up enough, Fran, that they actually emailed me and asked me to listen to him. But we recorded this show a little bit early this week, so I didn't get a chance to get to him yet.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. He's literally at the top of my list for guys to watch up front. Having watched the Washington backs, having watched Dante Pettis, you get to see what that offensive line was able to do last year. And they were able to keep Jake Browning upright. You know, he ran into a couple sacks last year. But overall, I thought that offensive line held up really well. Coleman Shelton is another guy at the guard spot at 6'5", 285 that has performed well. So those are two linemen I'm definitely excited to watch more of. There's a lot of linemen out west that I am excited to dig deeper into. None of them that I've done a deep dive yet. But Scott Quesenberry, the center for Josh Rosen at UCLA. There's Jeremy Irwin at Colorado. There's Cody O'Connell at Washington State. Casey Tucker at Stanford. So I'm excited to dig deeper into all these names. Just haven't done a deep dive yet. Like you said, shot a little bit early this week. But excited about some of the names.
Yeah, I guess I got to watch I got to watch Casey Tucker and see what I mean. I always watch Stanford. Whenever I'm watching Stanford and I see the Tucker on the back, I'm like, all right, I see you. No relation that I'm aware of, and I'll be able to tell you after about three plays if we're distant relatives or not. That's all I'll need is three plays to be able to tell you whether or not he's got my Tucker blood in him. Anyway, how about the D-line? It seems like there's always a decent amount of D-linemen from, you know, the West Coast as well. And there's also a lot of D-linemen who they're names are hard to pronounce. I know that for a fact. I think is it Vita Vaya?
I think that's it. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I know it's the big like nose tackle from Washington. I've seen him play. There is a 17th consecutive Latulale from Utah we should talk about. Lowell Latulale. And Porter Gustin, he's a guy that he played in the Army Bowl, Fran, and they called him Drago, and I could not believe what he looked like as a high school kid. I mean, he was like 6'5", 260, totally shredded. I mean, he looked like Joey Bosa. I mean, he looked like he was already an NFL player, and they said all he did was lift and eat, and like both his parents are like power lifters. He had the dyed blonde. I mean, he really did look like Drago. So what do you have on those three guys?
You know, I read a funny story over the summer. I forget exactly where I read it, that Porter Gustin wakes up every morning at 3:30 a.m. just to chug a protein shake, and then he goes back to bed and then gets up again at 4:30 just to go and work out. Like, that's what he does every single day, and I think that's awesome. Porter Gustin's really intriguing, and I think that he's getting a little bit underrated because right now I don't think that – like his test numbers I think are pretty impressive from what's been reported out there. I know Bruce Feldman put some numbers out from some of the things that he's been able to do in the weight room and the 40 time and things like that. But on tape, I didn't see a great athlete, but I still saw a player that I really liked because he gets it as a pass rusher. He uses his hands really well. He's got a number of different ways that he attacks offensive tackles, and he can win from a number of different spots. He lined up with a two-point stance and a three-point stance, but mostly standing up. I think the kid is really, really intriguing, and he's got a high floor. You love the work ethic and all that, but mainly I'm watching him on tape. I see a tough kid that knows what he's doing as a pass rusher. I think he fits as a strong side linebacker in any scheme at the next level. And then you talk about those two D tackles that you mentioned earlier. Vita Vea from Washington is really intriguing. You know, 6'4", he's listed at 346 right now. He arrived on campus as a 280-pound high school running back. And now the way he's transformed his body and become one of the most dominant interior linemen in the country, I think it's really impressive. He reminds me in a lot of ways of Dontari Poe coming out of Memphis because of his size. He's got pretty light feet. He's got the ability to defend the run and hold up as a nose guard. And just you see that natural power, that ability to use his hands to control a block, shed the blocker and fly to the football. He's not a great athlete. He's not going to be known as this, this guy, a one-gap guy that's going to rush upfield and make plays in the backfield. But Vita Vea, I think, is really, really intriguing because of his ability to hold up at the point of attack. And then Lola Tulale is really interesting as well. I'm not as high on him as some of the other guys that I've watched, but he's a really interesting player. Again, you see that power. You see that ability to defend the run, the pop in his hands. He's really heavy-handed, can control blocks at the point of attack with ease. Again, he's just not a dynamic athlete for the position. You're not going to confuse him with guys like a Maurice Hurst or a Deshaun Hand or even an Andrew Brown from Virginia. I think Lola Tulale is more of that straight-up two-gap nose tackle that's going to take on a block, hold up at the point of attack, and allow other guys to make plays, but a really fun player to watch as well.
Let's get to the next level, the linebacker level. Cameron Smith from USC, that name is a guy that's been around for a few years, I think, in Washington. Again, another position group where Washington's got a couple guys.
Yeah, and Cameron Smith is a really interesting player. He's 6'2", 245 from USC, and he was second-team All-Conference last year, led the team in tackles. Big, strong, really good tackler. He's kind of a throwback player in terms of his skill set. People are going to worry about it. Will he hold up in coverage? Does he have the athletic ability to play as a three-down player in today's game? And I think those are valid questions that he's going to have to prove this year and another year as a starter there for Clancy Pendergrass. But really the big thing when you watch him is you see a player who's got plus instincts. He's tough. He's strong. He's a good tackler, a reliable run defender. So those guys still have a role in today's game, and I think Cameron Smith will have a role in today's NFL. So it'll be really interesting to see how he develops this year. And then you've got the duo up in Washington who, you know, a lot of people are really excited about Azeem Victor. He got a lot of buzz as a potential second-round pick, ended up breaking his leg, I believe, on the back end of last year, I think late November, broke his leg, so he was out for the playoffs. But Azeem Victor is talented. He's 6'3", 230 pounds, so he's got really intriguing size and length. He's athletic. He can play sideline to sideline. He's an explosive guy, rangy kid that can play and cover every inch of the field. I just worry about him in the box. You know, he's not a strong player at the point of attack. He can get washed out by tight ends and fullbacks a little bit more than I'd like to see. He's not a great tackler right now. He had a lot of misses on tape. And I don't think that he's got plus instincts. You know, there's a lot of false steps there, a little bit slow to read his keys. So I just want to see a guy who right now is more of a developmental player. You like his upside because of his physical traits, but he doesn't show those football traits that you'd like to see from him at this stage of his career. And then his teammate, Keyshawn Bieria, is another guy who he's 6'1", 230, so he's got some size to him. Was second-team All-Conference last year, and was a playmaker for them. I think he's more of a coverage guy. You know, he's athletic. He's got a really good feel in zone coverage, the ability to pattern match and find his way to the football in coverage. He's just not a great player in the box either. You know, you talk about his ability to hold up at the point of attack. You talk about his ability to finish at the point of contact as a tackler. Those are all questions I've got about Bieria. I think both guys are more role players at the next level, but interesting prospects nonetheless.
Let's get to DBs. It also feels like there's always a solid amount of DBs that come out of the West Coast. It's funny, when I think West Coast, I just think quarterbacks, receivers, D linemen, DBs, which, I mean, those are all pretty important positions. Is there anybody that stands out to you or anybody really worth talking about on the West Coast this year? I know USC always has at least one guy.
Yeah, probably the biggest name is the cornerback Amon Marshall at this point from USC, 6'1", 200 pounds. is an intriguing player. He's young still. He's a true junior. He's only going to be 21 years old if he were to come out. And for next season, he would start his rookie season at 21 years old. So you like his upside. I'm excited to watch him and Chris Hawkins, who's a safety in that secondary. Quentin Meeks from Stanford's got some size and some length, which makes him intriguing. Jay Irvine from Oregon State as well. So there are definitely some interesting players out west.
All right, for the first time this year, I am excited. We get to go head-to-head, and it might end up being like the game of the year. So let's do it, Bri, head-to-head.
Head-to-head.
It's the marquee game. Look, there's some other good games, including Michigan-Florida, but the biggest one, Alabama-Florida State. Now, we've done the SEC preview, Fran. We've done the ACC preview, so we've done the preview for both these teams and their conferences. But specifically in this game, some of the matchups that you'll be looking for. I mean, the one that just jumps off the paper to me is Calvin Ridley, the Alabama wide receiver, versus Florida State corner Tavarius McFadden.
No question. That's absolutely the premier matchup in that game. And you look at Calvin Ridley, he's my favorite receiver in the country coming into the season because of his athletic ability, his speed, and also his route running, a guy that can track the ball deep downfield. He was not as much of a vertical threat this past season as Jalen Hurts was kind of coming into his own as a passer, and we'll see how that improves this year. But Ridley's got the skill set to be a dynamic weapon in the NFL. And you look at Tarvarius McFadden on the other side, his first year starting last year, has all the tools to be a lockdown corner. There were times where he didn't show that in terms of his reaching his ceiling, but at 6'2", 198, a guy that looks like he's got low 4.4 speed, he's got the ball skills to be able to finish at the catch point and find the ball downfield. He needs to work a lot in his technique. I think he can be a little bit lax in coverage, a little bit in man. But overall, this guy's got all the tools to be able to hold up with a player like Ridley. So that's absolutely the premier matchup in this game. DeAndre Francois, the redshirt sophomore quarterback from Florida State, he's going to have his work cut out for him. The hallmark of his game last year was his toughness in the pocket and his poise. And going up against this Alabama defense, which is replacing a lot, no question, but they've got a lot of players that he's going to have to worry about, whether it's at the linebacker level with Sean Dion Hamilton and some of those guys they've got coming back. In the secondary, you've got Minka Fitzpatrick and Anthony Averett, Ronnie Harrison and Tony Brown. Up front, there we talked about Deshaun Hand and Dayron Payne. I mean, this is a really talented Alabama defense once again. So DeAndre Francois, I think, a guy that has the ability to potentially vault himself into the conversation as one of the top quarterbacks in the country. I think he's going to have his work cut out for him. Alabama on the other side of the football, you know, Damian Harris is not getting the love that I think he should be right now. He started a lot of games last year for Alabama ahead of Bo Scarborough, who's getting a lot of the love right now. And Bo Scarborough, don't get me wrong, really talented back. He's explosive. A lot of people will be reminded of Derrick Henry when they watch him because of his size and his physicality. But he's had a lot of injuries in his career. He's had issues with putting the football on the ground. You look at Damian Harris, and this kid is a steady Eddie in terms of his vision, his toughness. He's got a really good all-around game. He's not as explosive as Scarborough, but he's got the ability to make people miss. I think when you look at those two backs in the backfield going up against this Florida State defensive front seven, and also safety Derwin James, who you got to put in there as well because of how often he plays down near the line of scrimmage, I think that's going to be a really interesting battle to watch in this game. Alabama always wants to run the football, and when those two backs in the backfield, I think they're going to be able to do that at a pretty high level. Down in the trenches, Bradley Bozeman, Lester Cotton for Alabama on the interior, I think those are the two guys that they're going to really need to hold up well because Florida State's interior defensive line, Derek Nnadi, DeMarcus Christmas, two of the best in terms of being a tandem on the interior of the defensive line in the country. Nnadi is one of my favorite D-tackles I've watched all summer long. That kid, I think I said it in the ACC preview, he wants to steal blocker souls. I mean, he is so good at the point of attack. He's really heavy-handed. He's tough to move off his spot. He knows how to use his hands and work a block and then finish in the backfield. He's got lighter feet than you'd expect for that pure nose guard spot. Derek Nnadi, I think, is a guy who could ruin the game. If Alabama is going to lose this game, I think Derek Nnadi is going to be one of the reasons why, because of his ability to control the opposing run game.
Neither one of these quarterbacks really strike me as being pro prospects, at least for what I saw last year. Am I wrong?
I definitely don't see it with Jalen Hurts. And I know he led this team to the national title game and all that. I don't see it with Hurts. I think Francois has got some traits, and I haven't done a full dive on him yet. But I think that when you look at some of the things that he was able to do last year, watching from afar, I think he showed flashes of some pro traits. I do want to see more. And I, like I said, haven't done a deep dive on either. Francois going to be a redshirt sophomore, so he is technically draft eligible, whereas Hurts is a true sophomore. He's still got another year. I'm a little bit more excited about Francois than Hurts. I'm not sure that I see it with Hurts in terms of his NFL prospects.
There is one other game I wanted to get your thoughts on, Michigan-Florida. Is there anybody that jumps out to you in that game? Obviously, the Rashawn Garys of the world, even though he's not draft eligible. Anybody else? I think, is Callaway suspended?
Callaway is suspended.
Too?
So, yeah, so we won't see Antonio Callaway against a very new-look Michigan secondary. I was just talking about this with a friend the other day. I feel like Michigan had like 9 defensive backs in the draft last year. So it is a completely transformed secondary from a year ago. They rotated a lot up front, Michigan did, in that front 7. So while they don't have a lot of starters coming back, you see players like Gary, who played a ton. You see Maurice Hurst, who is entering his senior season as a penetrating 3 technique. I think he's going to be one of the players I'm most excited to see from the Michigan side of things. And then you look on the other side of the ball, I think Michigan up front, they've got Mason Cole, who was a center last year, and I was a little bit underwhelmed watching him. I don't think that he felt completely comfortable at center. He's moving back outside to tackle. I don't think necessarily that he's a tackle either in the NFL when you look at his body type, but he'll certainly be a player that you're going to want to watch. They've got some interesting players there, Michigan, along that offensive line. But then you look at Florida, I mean, Antonio Callaway is certainly one of the more intriguing names, and he's going to be out of this game. So who's going to step up for them? I think that they, after losing so many pieces in the secondary, they're going to rely a lot on Duke Dawson in the secondary to really kind of bring things up to speed. And then you've got some players on the front 7, the CC Jeffersons of the world, that a lot of people are excited about as well. So a lot of young players, or maybe necessarily inexperienced players, that people aren't necessarily in on yet, that I think have the ability to showcase themselves in this game. It's really a shame, you know, at Callaway, and look, it's not, you know, you got to fault the kid. It's his fault here that he's not playing in this game for what he did off the field. But when you look at Antonio Callaway, had a really good opportunity to showcase his talent to a wide audience, and obviously he's going to miss out on that opportunity this week against Michigan.
In terms of other matchups, you've got West Virginia running back Justin Crawford against Virginia Tech safety Terrell Edmonds. You talked about Porter Gustin for the Pac-12 preview. He'll be going up against that big left tackle at Western Michigan. But the other one that intrigues me is Wyoming quarterback Josh Allen going up against Iowa and Josie Jewell. Will this be the best defense that Allen goes against all year, Fran?
Well, we'll see. I mean, it certainly is going to be the big test. And I promise you that every NFL evaluator will be watching this game, maybe not live, but when the tape comes out and everyone does their study on Josh Allen, they're going to want to see how he did against a Big Ten defense. They watched him last year against Nebraska. They were not all his fault, but I think he threw 4 or 5 picks in that game, and things just kind of unraveled. And like I said, I don't think all those interceptions were his fault. And actually, I kind of walked away from that 4-interception game kind of liking Josh Allen. It was one of the first games I watched of him. But when you see, that'll be a game that everybody wants to watch. Iowa's got some players in that defense. They've got young players in the defensive line. Josie Jewell's a returning senior. They've got some players in the secondary as well that are experienced. So it will be a veteran defense that he's going up against at Iowa. This will be a good test for Josh Allen, who, again, is coming back to school, having lost his number one receiver, having lost his number one running back in Brian Hill. They have some moving parts in the offensive line. So he's lost a lot of pieces from last season. So this will be a good opening week test for Josh Allen on a national stage. A lot of people will have their eyes on him. It's going to be a big matchup for him overall as he makes his way towards the draft.
Love it. Just like I love this podcast, we'll dive into week 2 next week. Always catch Fran with his Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. And Saturday scouting article detailing even more matchups to watch in college football. Again, Fran at FDuffy3. I'm at Ross Tucker NFL on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook.com/RossTuckerNFL. If you'd like, you absolutely can always interact with Fran and me every day at Tuckheads.com. Other than that, the keg is kicked and we are all tapped out.
Thanks for enjoying your Frosty One while listening to the College Draft.
Chugga, 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 chugga.
Make sure you're also subscribing to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, Fantasy Feast, and Even Money Podcasts, all available on iTunes at rostucker.com or wherever podcasts can be found.